is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It is 6 after the hour on this free-for-all Friday. Thanks for dialing it in. Time to get things started and take a look at what's happening this week, what's going to happen this coming week, I suppose. This coming week is a programming note, by the way. I'll not even know what's going on. And some of you would say, well, that's normal. No, not you. Just, of course, it's Friday, so I unlock the door and, you know, see what kind of street urchins end up in the building. And, of course, Brother Shane makes his way in.
You'd like to use the word slithered?
Slithered!
Mm-hmm. I can see it.
You know, I don't think that word gets used nearly enough now that you mention it. Slithered is a good word that clearly needs more play. Anyhow, so it is Friday.
Moving phone numbers, the weekend.
888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. We'll talk a little bit more about the CWD concerns that are sweeping Michigan. It's most certainly in southern Michigan. We'll do that in a few minutes. First, though, I want to talk about the decay, the spiraling out of control of the city of Baltimore. The city of Baltimore, you know, where Freddie Gray died, and they tried to turn this into some sort of political event, they being Marilyn Moseley, the state's prosecutor for Baltimore, the mayor of Baltimore, also deep involved in this. In fact, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, they're calling for her to step down. Many are saying she is obviously not qualified to hold the position. You see, Baltimore is gripped by violence now. The police are like, well, you know, we'll just back up a bit. You guys want less policing? Fine. This era of mass incarceration that Hillary Clinton wants to bring to an end? Fine. As a result, Baltimore has turned into a war zone. For example, a 31-year-old woman and her young boy shot in the head just yesterday, becoming Baltimore's 37th and 38th homicide victims so far in the month of May, the city's deadliest in 15 years, and on its way to being its deadliest month ever. That's how bad it is in Baltimore. You see, if you just say, you know what, let's not enforce the laws, let's back up. Let's leave you guys in charge. What happens when you have no law and order?
Anarchy.
That's the word. And so we have this mentality right now. And you know, we don't see it here right where I live. But it's not that far away, I don't think. Police are racist. You know, what do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now. Well, this type of mentality fueled by the merchants of race like Al Sharpton and the others who always descend to these places. And what do you have? If you have one of the deadliest months in the history of the city of Baltimore, 38 homicides and counting, how many more days do they have? What's the date today? The 28th, 9th?
29th. 29th of May, 2015.
So how do you deal with it? You've got a whole mentality that somehow the police are wrong. The police, predictably enough, are, I don't know if they're fearful of doing their jobs, but they're obviously reluctant in many ways, not just in Baltimore, but around the country. Because can you imagine if you're in Baltimore, you get involved in an altercation with a suspect that turns violent. And you're a white police officer. Actually, if you're any police officer, because in Baltimore, it doesn't matter. If you're black, and a black person dies, they still call you a racist. How does that work, Shane? Well, bring me your insights here, because of the six police officers arrested, one was charged with second-degree murder, a black man. Two more were charged with manslaughter, a black woman and another black man. One other white officer charged with manslaughter, but the other two officers that are white, much lesser charges. So out of the six arrested, the much more serious charges ended up with the black officers, and yet the narrative continues that police officers are racist.
Well, according to some people in the race, that blacks can be racist against blacks.
That doesn't even make sense.
Well, it can and it can't. But it, if a black officer sees a white person or a black person, they're more likely to go after the black person.
That's the narrative.
Right, exactly. So, they have problems in Baltimore that go way beyond racism.
So yesterday here on the program, Larry Elder was on the program here. A black libertarian from Hollywood. I mean, really? Where did you come from? Anyhow, he was fabulous. And outlining this whole notion of everybody's a victim. You know, it's this whole notion of victimhood that's really the problem. Because nobody really cares, for the most part, as long as you go to work, work hard, accomplish things in your life. I'm sorry, it's never really mattered to me much. It's never really mattered to my brother here much. We work with a variety of people in a variety of places, and it just doesn't matter from a variety of backgrounds. Are the majority of the people I've worked with over the course of my life white? Yeah. And most people have Labradors because that's just the way it is. There's more Labradors, and right now there are more white people in America. 40 years from now, that's going to be different.
Well, they predicted that, but right now, I think the latest census says 75% of the United States of America is still considered Caucasian.
Right. So I work with more Caucasian people. Why? There's more of them. Do I care about the other stuff? Not really, until people like Al Sharpton and others grind it into me. And accuse me of being racist and accuse me of being the problem. Like the Boston University professor saying the problem with America is white men. Really? I'm the problem. Now, how is that? Because I get up and go to work every day? Or Shane, you go to work every day because, and you're the problem because you're simply because you're a white guy? Talk about racism. I mean, that's it. And what about, you know, back to the Larry Elder conversation I had yesterday. Him going through the list of colorful names that he had been called, but Uncle Tom is probably the easiest one to throw out there because it's so commonly used. And him dispelling the notion, well, you know, black people aren't even supposed to like white people, he pointed out. And if you do, you're an Uncle Tom. He said, talk about a racist slur. Uncle Tom is about as racist as you can get. White people aren't Uncle Toms, was his point. You know, it's calling a black person calling another black person an Uncle Tom is about as insulting or racist in nature as you can get. Make sense?
Well, there's the racism I was talking about.
There you go. 14 after the hour, 888-900-9966. This part of the program brought to you by AmericanMetalRoost.com. AmericanMetalRoost.com now hiring for installers and salespeople. If you're looking for something new, find it at AmericanMetalRoofs.com.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
Never before have I turned on you when you look too good to me. Your beady eyes, they could cut me in two, and I just can't let you be. But it's a free for all, and a heart of sin. You can bet your life. Stakes are high, and so am I. It's in the air tonight.
18 after the hour. Free for all Friday. There you have it, little Tedley for you. 888-900-9966. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush was in town yesterday. In fact, he was in several places in Michigan yesterday, including Eagle Eye Golf Course, right there on the north side of Lansing, if you will. I was on hand for that event. I emceed the event for the governor. And I have to admit, it's the first time I've met Jeb Bush in person, and I found him to be more impressive than I expected as far as his conversation and so forth. Earlier in the day, it was part of a 3-day visit to the state. He said he expects to spend a lot of time here if he becomes a candidate, which he will. I'm a little confused about three candidates that are definitely coming. Three of the stronger, four actually, if you look at Rick Perry, but four of the stronger candidates that are coming to the race are the governors. Rick Perry, longest serving governor in the history of Texas, served for 16 years there. Scott Walker will, of course, announce his candidacy, the current governor of Wisconsin. He said he would do that when I spoke to him. He said he would do that right after he gets his budget under control in the state of Wisconsin. John Kasich said he will announce sometime after the end of June. It's a long wait, but those are the four people I think that are most likely to become president of the United States. Obviously, if you listen to this program, I think that John Kasich has more to offer than others in the race for a variety of reasons. But Jeb Bush, we'll be having excerpts of his speech coming up next hour, by the way. Jeb Bush gave a compelling look at the United States and where we're going, and that we have to be a world leader again. I think that it's safe to say, and the room was packed. You know, normally this Lincoln Day dinner gets, you know, 200-300 people. It was twice that, more like 500 or 600. And so he packed the room, make no mistake. And it came across terrific. It's an important part of the country, he said, of Michigan. If you think about it from an electoral standpoint, I think Republicans need to get back up here a lot. At the state level, Republicans dominate. But at the national level, for presidential elections, we haven't. In fact, the last person to carry Michigan was the governor's father, George H.W. Bush, back in 1988. And so you have to ask yourself, why is that? 600 people is the crowd, the official tally. Just looking at some notes here, official tally was 600 at that get-together, which, you know, for a guy who, he has a lot of negatives that carry around with him. But you know, the fact of the matter is this, for people that are from Florida, my wife, for example, they loved Jeb Bush as governor down there. Jeb Bush left a very purple state. And make no mistake, you know, one time it's Republican, one time it's Democrat. He was only the third Republican governor in the history of the state and the first to ever win re-election, Jeb Bush. And so he was governor from 1999 to 2007. He left with a 67% approval rating. I mean, make no mistake, he's pro-gun. His stance on immigration get him in trouble. But I think that he's a lot more conservative than people actually realize.
He has a lot of baggage just by the Bush name, unfortunately.
That's my point, yeah.
But a lot of people down there, you talk to people from Florida, and they really liked him. I mean, I've talked to a variety of people.
Republicans and Democrats.
Both. That's why you use the word purple. Exactly. He's a very popular man. Hispanic wife. He is a Bush. A lot of people are scared of the dynasty, so to speak. But he has a lot of interesting ideas.
You know, I've heard a lot of people say we want somebody besides a Bush or a Clinton. And let me say this to you. It's no more rational to say it's time for Hillary and we want Hillary because it's a woman. That's no more rational than saying, well, we don't want Jeb Bush because, you know, his name's Bush. Both of these things are idiotic. We wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, strictly because she's a woman. And you shouldn't rule out a candidate strictly because of his last name. Both of those ideas are idiotic. Jeb Bush gave a good, you know, and I'm, anybody that was there that happens to be listening, if you've got some input about what you thought about his comments, I'd appreciate it. I'd take your thoughts, your comments. Bill Schuette, of course, was there. And I get a kick out of Bill Schuette. I'm not sure what's in his coffee, but the man's going 100 miles an hour all the time with a big smile on his face. And I think he's terrific. I do. He's got a big smile on his face all the time. He got up and apparently him and Jeb have known each other for years and years. And he shared a couple of terrific stories about that. And said Jeb wasn't, he's better rebounder than shooter. Schuette said, I'm more of a shooter. I'll let Jeb get the boards. At any rate, it was a good get together. It was a good peek forward. I think Michigan's going to be back in play. Here's the thing. Michigan's been in play slightly the last couple of rounds for the presidential election, which means if you're slightly, you get a few visits here and there, but you get closer to the election and they all disappear. They don't spend their money here. Wouldn't it be nice if Michigan were close this time, at least from the perspective of we'd be able to see the candidates up close in person more often, get a better chance to see who's running. I think that'd be good for everybody. Anyhow, coming up in the next hour, we'll talk or hear from Governor Bush. It's Free for All Friday on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
The Steve Gruber Show. Get the news and information vital to your world.
And don't forget that there is a someone up above.
It's 33 after the hour. Free for All Friday here at the Steve Gruber Show. If you're interested in chiming in, whether it's on Plan B for the roads, the problem with the deer herd here in southern Michigan, or anything else that comes to mind. Let's go ahead and drop in. Give me a call. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. You can get connected here. And we'll talk about whatever's on your mind. Right now, you know, I hadn't even thought about it. I saw this on the rundown. I said to Ivy, I said, what's this? She goes, well, you know, it's pretty close. Father's Day. Did you realize how close it was?
No.
Yeah. So, you know, what are you getting me?
You're not my father.
Oh, yeah. Megan Boyd here, head of media relations for Best Buy. Here talking about the best things for dad's gifts this year. I don't know if there's a memorable dad's gift that I've ever gotten, but I'm going to think about it. Megan, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So, all right, when is Father's Day? You know, these things sneak up on people.
Yes, so Father's Day is right around the corner coming up. And, you know, one of the things that Dad always really loves to get is tech gadgets. They're great options. There's tons of different things. One of his favorite gifts, I think, every year.
So what kind of gadgets are out there? What kind of things are out there?
Yeah, there's tons of different options depending on what your dad likes to do. So I always try to remind our customers, you know, be aware, pick up on the hints that he might have dropped if there's something that he wants. If he's a little bit of a health nut, maybe it's going to be one of our activity trackers. We have tons of great ones. The new Jawbone Up 24 is going to be one that tracks your activity levels. So it'll track your walking, your calories, how far you've walked for the day, your sleep, which is pretty cool, and it's under $100. So that's an option if he's a health nut. If he's a little bit more of a tech junkie, maybe you want to get him a cool tablet like the Microsoft Surface. It's super lightweight, really thin. It has an attachable keyboard, so that way he can bring it on work trips, stick it in his bag. It's easy to carry around. That's going to be a great option.
I think that, you know, these activity trackers, these are these bands that people have around the wrist that I see all the time. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, so they're just little wrist-based devices, and they kind of tell you how busy you've been throughout the day, so they're pretty cool.
I think they should have one, you know, that, you know, if Dad's sitting around and it just says, you know, you're a slob because you're not doing enough. Get off the couch, move, you know, time to do something. Wouldn't that be better, like an alarm goes off, get off the couch, it's time to go.
Well, It's funny because they've gotten to the point in the technology where a lot of these you can set, and it's like, okay, I want you to remind me that after 30 minutes I've been sitting on my butt, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
And it'll start vibrating, and it'll tell you, get up and move. You haven't been active enough today.
It's the slob alarm.
The really come a long way.
Yeah, slob alarm. Hey, chunky, get off the couch. You can't lose weight if you're sitting there. Yeah, I like it. Hey, reminder. So we talk about tech things that are out there. You know, I don't know that I can remember anything particularly memorable that I ever got for Father's Day. You know, people get them ties and so forth and this and that. I don't want a tie. I don't know if I want anything. I just like to hang out with my kids. Maybe that's what I want for Father's Day. But what else is out there?
Yeah, so then, too, there's other great options like the Motorola 360 smartwatch. So that's actually really cool looking, super sleek and stylish. It looks just like a normal wristwatch, but then it'll give you all of your text, call, email alerts if you have an Android phone, so you can sync the two. So that way then, if you're running around the house, you don't need to worry about carrying your phone with you, and you're never going to miss a call from your kids. So that's a great option, too, for Dad.
So nice electronic tether, that's a good idea. So they never lose Dad when they need to, you know, when they need money. Let's be honest. They want to find you when they need a little bit of cash in their pocket. I get that. And Megan, give me a couple more things here that we can think about for Father's Day, and I'll try to figure out when Father's Day actually is.
Right. So then, too, if Dad's super stylish and you don't want to break the bank, we have some new designer accessories from Cole Haan for Dad's smartphone. So those are going to be a great gift for under $100, and it's a real leather case. They look really great. Something that, you know, if you just want to get him something, you're not really going to break the bank, but you want to show him how much you love him. He's super stylish. That's a great option. Another thing that's going to be a really great option, Steve, is a big screen TV. So right now, if you buy a 4K UHD TV and a TV mount, our Geek Squad will come out and they'll mount it and install it for free for you.
So
that's a great option, too.
A big screen TV. Now, see, that makes a little more sense for me. That's working for me right there, you know. I like that idea.
Clearly, you haven't gotten one. If you can't remember your memorable gifts, I'm sure you would have remembered if you got one from your kids one year.
I guarantee you, Megan, if I got a big old flat screen TV. See, here's the problem. If you get the flat screen TV and the activity tracker, these things could be in conflict with each other. You know, hey, if our arm starts to vibrate to the point that it's getting bloody because you sat on the couch watching the big screen TV, see, now there's the problem. Therein lies the problem, see? Yeah, it can create issues.
Cancel each other out a little bit.
Yeah, create an issue inside your home. Okay, give me one more good one, Megan, and then we got to run. Give me one more good one out there. And Father's Day is June 21st, by the way. You got some time to think about this.
And, you know, the best gift always, too, if you don't know what to get Dad, a gift card. That way he can pick out whatever he wants. Maybe he has a big screen TV that he's eyeing, and you don't want to quite break the bank by buying him that. That way, give him a gift card, show him you love him, and he can pick out exactly what he wants or use it towards whatever he wants.
That's
another great option.
All right, Megan, I greatly appreciate it. You know, there's always good options out there. I'm concerned about this activity tracker, though, because I might not be active enough. But I appreciate the input. Megan Boyd, head of media relations for Best Buy. Greatly appreciated, Megan.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it. Father's Day coming up on the 21st of June. So some things to think about between here and there, some things to think about. Shifting gears now back to some serious topics. I had a chance last night when I was out with all these folks to talk to some people from Meridian Township where this CWD deer, this chronic wasting disease deer, was discovered. And they are being told, well, pretty much what I was telling you for the last couple of days, they're being told that they're going to take most of the deer out of Meridian Township. And I said, no, they're going to take all of the deer out of Meridian Township, I believe, and maybe farther. Make no mistake, they're going to eradicate this deer population, which is going to be a big job, and any place else that it shows up in the state now. So you better hope that this thing doesn't come to roost in your part of the woods, whether you hunt or don't hunt, because the deer population will be greatly changed for generations to come. Greatly changed. And this effort is underway now. In fact, some of the folks there were surprised at how aggressive the DNR was going to be. And they're all asking the same question. Well, where did this deer come from? Well, there's a rumor out there now, just rumor, by the way, that this deer is an escapee from some high fence operation, some deer breeding operation. And that's part of the investigation ongoing. because they want to know exactly where this deer came from. It didn't just fall from a spaceship and fall into southern Michigan in Ingham County. I can guarantee you that. So the investigation into that is continuing. But I will tell you exactly what's going to happen. That population is going to be eradicated. They don't have any choice. The way these prions work, the way this pathogen works, they have no choice. It has to be done. It's an unfortunate byproduct of having this disease in your herd. It's 41 after the hour. Just trying to bring it all to you as fast as I can. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Shane's high heel injuries. This is a serious problem, apparently. Epidemiologist will be here to talk about it right here on the Steve Gerber Show.
The Steve Gerber Show, jump starting your day with the news that matters.
After the hour, and I guess I didn't realize what an epidemic it was. You know, I saw Shane Parade in here in his finest, but I didn't realize that injuries associated with high heels were, was serious. But high-heeled shoe-related injuries have doubled between 2002 and 2012. I can't make this up. This is critical. According to a new study from the University of Alabama at Birmingham, probably paid by you, the U.S. taxpayer, that's got to make you feel pretty good. And we're not talking about blisters here. We're talking about actually more serious injuries. Dr. Jill Blaylock here. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
All right. So, seriously, these people are an epidemic of injuries, ankle injuries or leg injuries. What are we talking about here?
Ankle, foot, lower extremity injuries. Yes, sir.
So how does this happen? I mean, they don't look, I've never looked good in heels myself, so I don't wear them, but they look uncomfortable to begin with.
I'm sure that's the case. I can't say I've ever worn them either, but certainly they're a very popular form of footwear among women, have been for quite a long time.
For decades, actually. All right, so doctor, you must see these sorts of injuries. Tell me what happens, how it happens, and what the long-term ramifications are.
Sure. Well, as you opened the story, you questioned why would we spend time focusing on this, and perhaps aren't there better things to focus on? But these are real injuries. These are women who were injured seriously enough to require treatment in an emergency department. We're talking about sprains. We're talking about fractures. And we're talking about injuries that, A, require medical treatment, and B, may require time off from work, limited activities. So, they've doubled. They've doubled over the past 10 years. And if we focused on any health problem that doubled over that period of time, it would perhaps not represent an epidemic in strict terms, but it represents something that the public should at least be aware of.
So why do you think that is? Why this this rash, if you will, of injuries involving footwear?
Sure. There are two potential reasons for this, one of which is that the usage of high heels has increased over that period of time. The popularity of them has increased. Or that the shoes have become more dangerous. Now, I personally haven't been paying attention to women's fashion over the past 10 years, but I certainly have noticed with a wife and a teenage daughter that there are more of these shoes around. Sandals now in the summer appear to be much higher than they used to be. It seems like flip-flops are not as fashionable as these. My daughter refers to them as wedge sandals. So I think it's partly attributable to the fact that women are wearing high heels or wearing shoes with high heels much more commonly, not just in business or social settings, but now in more common settings. And I think also potentially the heels are getting higher. And the higher the heel, the physics would tell us, the more greater likelihood of injury.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, now that I think about it, you're right. These wedge, and you know, my wife has some wedge sandals. I know that. And I see them more commonly. I guess you're right about that. So maybe it's a shift in fashion, which has created a shift in injuries. Now, and trust me, we'll make jokes about this for the rest of the day. But the fact of the matter is, these can be serious injuries. I mean, if you can, you know, tear up an ankle or possibly break bones in the bottom of your leg, that's a very serious possible injury.
That's exactly right. You know, and you and a lot of people can poke fun at this study. And the reality is that if you're sitting in an emergency department because you've been injured seriously enough to require that level of treatment, chances are, you know, you don't see it as funny anymore. And you know, if you've had any type of, you know, leg, lower extremity injury that laid you up from your social activities or from work, I think we can, you know, quickly set aside the humor of the study and start recognizing that, as I said, these are real injuries that require real medical treatment and have real consequences.
Well, and sure, and we can set aside the humor for a moment. We'll get right back to it, make no mistake. But, okay, so you're a doctor, and you just mentioned the fact that your wife and daughter wear these sorts of things. And, by the way, we're on the line with Dr. Gerald Blalock about the injuries to shoes here, and so from high-heeled shoes specifically. But you probably haven't had any luck in telling your wife she should have less shoes and should have less high heels. And I bet that conversation with your daughter didn't go very far either.
You're exactly correct, but those conversations with my wife and daughter about most things don't go that well.
Well, there is that.
And the reality is, and I actually had this conversation with my wife last night in anticipation of speaking with you this morning, because it was actually her, like most of my good ideas, that came from her. The idea for this study actually came from her, noticing, the increased popularity of these shoes and the potential for a fall risk. And the conversation we had was, you know, the high heel shoes aren't inherently dangerous like most consumer products. The danger comes when they're used in inappropriate settings. And the conversations I've had with my daughter and with my wife are, you know, when wearing your wedges or your high heel shoes, be aware of your surroundings. If you're going down the stairs, hold on to the handrail. If it's rainy or you're on uneven ground, you know, be aware of that. Take them off. So again, it's not so much that high heel shoes should be banned. That's not the conclusion of the paper. It's not the conclusion of our research. It's you know, it's the appropriate use of them in the appropriate setting.
Well, I greatly appreciate it. It's Dr. Gerald McGuinn, PhD, Vice Chair and Professor of the Department of Epidemiology at UAB's School of Public Health. Doctor, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Meet for my hockey friends. Yeah, for my hockey friends. The Grand Rapids Griffins doing well again this year, as they often do. They're a feeder team for the Detroit Red Wings. Peter Wallner here is a beat reporter for the Griffins to tell us what's going on. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to have you. So the Griffins doing well again. Where are we in the terms of the playoffs right now?
Well, they trail Utica Comets 2-1. They just lost last night 4-1. They have two more games in Grand Rapids tonight and Sunday. And then the final two games will be back in Utica.
If for anybody that follows the Red Wings, people know that this is a farm club, if you will, for the Red Wings. So a lot of the future Red Wings players come through the Griffins there in Grand Rapids. And so in the Grand Rapids area, they're quite popular, are they not?
Yeah, they are. They have 7,000 tickets sold for tonight's game already, which is going to be their all-time best in franchise history for a conference finals. I think Grand Rapids, I think the Griffins are third or fourth in the AHL in attendance. They had numerous sellouts. It's a fun atmosphere. They do pretty well.
Yeah, and 7,000 people. I mean, let's be honest, Pete. Everybody likes a winner.
Yeah, it does make a difference. Yeah, when they were struggling or not doing as well, they would average,
Yeah, so
they have some games with 5,000-6,000.
And real quickly before we run out of time here, I see the Detroit Red Wings are in need of a coach, and there's rumor the coach of the Griffins could end up going down the road.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a no-brainer. Jeff Lasher has been the coach with Grand Rapids the past 3 years. He's pretty much paid his dues, served his time. Ken Holland hasn't interviewed anybody else. He talked with him earlier this week, and all indications are that once the playoffs are over, that Jeff Lasher will become the coach of Red Wings.
So there's a good place for you to go find the new coach of the Red Wings to go watch the Griffins play hockey this weekend in Grand Rapids. Pete, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed.
You betcha. Take care.
There you have it. So go Griffins. And then Jeff is on his way to Detroit for a much bigger contract, by the way. 57 after the hour. Bringing you up to speed on everything Michigan. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Six after on this Friday, free for all Friday. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-900-9966. Welcome your common sense input. The city of Baltimore erupted in the wake of the death of Freddie Gray. He died in police custody. Nobody knows for sure how, but six police officers have been charged in his death now, three black, three white. Three black officers facing much more serious charges overall than their white counterparts in this regard, but yet the race card is played anyway. Now, since that time, Baltimore has suffered through its most violent month. Its most violent month. What do we have? 38 homicides now so far in the month of May in the city of Baltimore. And yet the mayor there, who was outspoken and outraged about the death of Freddie Gray, has had little to say with the death of all these other citizens of the city of Baltimore. Stephanie Rawlings Blake facing tough questions yesterday from a Fox News reporter. Looked out of her element again. And where is the Reverend Al Sharpton? Where is Reverend Al with his outrage? If black lives matter the way they say they do, where the hell's Al Sharpton? Or does it just matter if we can get TV cameras around and glorify Al Sharpton and his other merchants of race and victimhood? I think you know the answer, because apparently these other 30 black lives didn't matter as much as Freddie Gray. Of course, they were killed by each other in violence and shootings and homicides and mayhem and chaos in the streets. But no protests, no rallies, no placards of Black Lives Matter with 38 people murdered in the city, the majority of which are African American. And with this backdrop, the next Democratic candidate for president is going to get into the race. The former mayor of Baltimore, Martin O'Malley, will join the race here tomorrow. You know, he's going to launch his White House bid at a park overlooking Baltimore's harbor. He's not doing well in the polls, but I will say this. Hillary Clinton is going to be death by a thousand cuts. I mean, she can only avoid the camera so long. She cannot avoid presidential debates. She will get asked the tough questions. She cannot shy away from the millions of dollars, $26.4 million they just happened to find here recently. Oh, gosh, did we forget to write that down? Yeah. Can you imagine if you forgot to write down 26 cents and the IRS was up in your grill? Anyhow, Martin O'Malley, I've said for a long time, is the Democrat most likely to get some momentum. We'll see how that goes. He's not that well-known nationally. He is the former governor of Maryland and could soon be competing for money, media, and support with a handful of other candidates, because other candidates that may get in the race includes Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Jim Webb, the former senator from Virginia, and former Rhode Island governor Lincoln Chafee. I mean, Jim Webb is an okay guy. He was an author. He made millions of dollars writing books. But you talk about a bunch of weaklings running for president. I mean, did you see the forum here recently? They had a dozen or maybe more Hillary Clinton supporters, hardcore, staunch supporters in a room. So what is Hillary's biggest accomplishment to each one of you? Nobody raised their hand. Nobody. Not one person raised their hand and said, well, she did. What exactly has she done? What has she done?
She bragged about she's colored her hair for longer than most
candidates. Oh, yeah, she's colored her hair more. She went to a Chipotle where nobody knew her. She rode around in a van called Scooby for, I don't know why they did that. Don't get me wrong. I have no problem with that. I name vehicles. I'm a vehicle namer. I'm all right with that, you know.
Agnes, yes.
Agnes, my motorhome. Agnes was great. She took care of us. But it's just, what has Hillary Clinton done? That's all I say. So then I look at Martin O'Malley. At least he's been a governor. He's been a mayor of a big city. And for the record, I'll give credit where credit is due. Martin O'Malley rolled out zero tolerance laws when it came to crime years ago. And as a result, in large part, and in part because of his policies, the crime rates in Baltimore have been going down for years. Well, until Stephanie Rawlings Blake came along and hung out with Al Sharpton, because apparently, you know, he's there to help her. But she is a political weakling. Marilyn Mosley is a neophyte prosecutor who's trying to prosecute as many people on the Baltimore Police Department as possible, a police department that's far more than 50% minority represented. The white officers on the Baltimore Police Department represent something like 46% of the entire force, and yet the entire place is racist. And just 3 months before the death of Freddie Gray, Barack Obama in his administration referred to the Baltimore Police Department as a model police department to be emulated by everyone in the country. They held up Baltimore. This is a model police department. This happened just 3 months before Freddie Gray. Did you know that?
No, I had not heard that.
A model police department. And suddenly Freddie Gray dies in the back of a van, and we better have investigators in there, and the Justice Department better be in hate crimes and racism, and it's just over-policing, and you know what? We shouldn't prosecute these crimes. We should, you know, stop, you know, having it. Right, because I want to live in a neighborhood where public urination doesn't get prosecuted, or public nudity, or public drunkenness doesn't get prosecuted. Well, they're just petty crimes or small. These are livability crimes. That's why you take people that are openly drunk on the streets to jail. People that, you know, are sleeping on the streets, you move them along. You take people that are, you know, robbing their fellow citizens, you take them to jail. You get rid of drug dealers on the street corners. That's how you make a neighborhood livable. That's how you bring it back.
Livable, and now we have 38 homicides in a month.
Right, because the policeman basically told to step back. So let's talk about what Hillary Clinton has to offer us then. The time of mass incarceration must come to an end. Really? Really?
Well,
what's it like in Chappaqua, do you think? Do you think they have a lot of crime in Chappaqua, New York?
Let's just open up the prisons.
Well, that's what Morgan Freeman said. Anybody that's in prison for a drug crime should just be released. Great idea. That's brilliant. Gives me a headache. And Michael Moore, disarm all the police officers. Well, how about we just do this, Michael Moore? You slob. Why don't we just let all the police go home? We won't enforce Baltimore at all. And see how that works out for you. 14 after the hour on the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
You know, and while I'm at it, one thing leads to another, all right? And while I'm at it, let's try this on for size. There hasn't been a Republican mayor in the city of Baltimore since 1967. All right? 1967. The last Republican mayor in Detroit was 1962. And if you go from Cleveland to Milwaukee to Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, you're going to find much the same. President Obama responded to the Baltimore riots with a heartfelt bout of self-righteous hectoring. Supposedly, we all know what's wrong with Baltimore and how to fix it, but apparently we don't care enough. Not only is this attitude high-handed, it rests on a flagrantly erroneous premise. This from the New York Post. I'm going to continue. President Obama doesn't have the slightest idea how to fix Baltimore. His solutions fall back on liberal bromides going back 50 years, dating back to the Kerner Commission after the riots of the 1960s. The less go-to solution to urban problems has been more social programs, more money. And since then, we've gotten more social programs and just as many urban problems, if not more. Baltimore, I may remind you, provides over $15,300 per pupil in every public school, and yet the Baltimore school system is a disaster. Thank you to the National Education Association for providing that to us. Exhibit A is Baltimore itself. The city hasn't been neglected. It has been misgoverned into the ground. It is a great society city that bought fully into the big government vision of the 1960s, and the bitter fruit has been corruption, despair, and yes, a whole hell of a lot of violence. Now, we don't know all the facts surrounding Freddie Gray's tragic death, but as a general matter, it is easy to believe that the Baltimore police are corrupt, dysfunctional, and unaccountable because most of the Baltimore government is that way as well. I mean, look at all the friendly sweetheart deals they have going on. And here's the news flash, my friends. This is a failure exclusively of liberal Democrats. Unless the root causes of Baltimore's troubles are to be traced to its Republican mayor, Theodore Roosevelt McKeldin, who left office back in 1967, as I pointed out. And it is an indictment of a failed model of socialist, liberal, progressive government. Take a close look. Look at Detroit, Baltimore, Cleveland, Philadelphia. The city has been shedding jobs and people for decades. Even during the 1990s when the rest of the country was booming, places like Baltimore and Detroit were shedding people. Baltimore is a high-tax city. Officials raised property taxes 21 times between 1950 and 1985, so says Steve Hank and Stephen Walters of John Hopkins University in a piece they wrote for the Wall Street Journal, channeling the proceeds to favored voting blocks and causing many homeowners and entrepreneurs, disproportionately Republicans, to run. It was brilliant politics as Democrats now enjoy an 8-to-1 voter registration advantage. Great. Democrats are in charge 8-to-1 in Baltimore. To counterbalance the taxes, they note, developers need to be lured to the city with subsidies, and the developers, in turn, contribute to politicians to stay in their good graces. See how this works? This makes for, of course, fertile ground for the city's traditional corruption, which flowers in Baltimore like nothing else. Baltimore's preferred driver of growth has been government. urban experts Fred Siegel and Van Smith write in City Journal that Baltimore has, quote, emphasized a state-sponsored capitalism that relies almost entirely on federal and state subsidies rather than actual market investments. No kidding. The model makes for high-profile development projects, but trickle-down crony capitalism hasn't worked for everyone else. At the same time, the city has failed miserably at the basic functions of government. Mayor Kurt Schmoke, in office for three terms beginning in the late 1980s, was notoriously soft on crime. Siegel and Smith write, during the 90s, tolerant Baltimore's crime rate, much of its drug-fueled, rocketed upward. 75% of the city's murders were drug-related. Tough on crime, New York's plummeted. Different mayors, different policies. But under Mayor Martin O'Malley, subsequent more strenuous policing, the crime rate dropped. It's still a violent city. Baltimore has the fifth highest murder rate among cities with a population of 100,000 or more in the nation. The schools, predictably, are a disaster run by and run for the teachers' unions and not the students. On top of all of this, two-thirds, in fact, more than two-thirds of all births in the city of Baltimore are out of wedlock. Toya Graham is being rightly celebrated for smacking her 16-year-old son and getting him out of the streets during the riots, and good for her. We've all seen the video. You could admire her pluck and still be daunted by the challenge she faces as a single mother of six. While President Obama is offering in response to this deep, decades-long decline, what is he putting on the table? Well, among other things, more pre-K education and job training, more money, of course, more government programs, more great society pursuits. Even though you can demonstrate time and again, it has been a miserable failure. Since the 1960s, depending on how you measure, we as a nation have spent $25 trillion, give or take a trillion here or there. And what's $1 trillion among friends anymore? $25 trillion that we spent on the great society visions of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Where's it gotten us? The imperative in Baltimore should be to think and act anew. Stop voting for Democrats. But the left's takeaway will be that there's an urgent need for more of the same. You see, the left creates these huge problems and says, hey, we can solve this. We are your savior. No, you idiots. You created the problem. Now get out of the way and let some real men and women get in there and fix it. But when they buy their voters, through social program after social program, using your tax dollars to buy the voters, well, it becomes a bit problematic, to say the least. Free for All Friday on the Steve Gruber Show.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
I want to live, I want to give. I've been a miner for a heart of gold. It's these expressions I never give.
33 after the hour, as I mentioned, was at an event with Jeb Bush. He's on a three-day swing in Michigan, and you're probably going to see him more. As long as Michigan's in play, we're going to see all of these folks. And so at the Lincoln Day dinner for Clinton and Ingham counties last night, a packed room, by the way, about 600 people, maybe a little bit more, in attendance to hear the governor make remarks on where he thinks we are as a nation, where we should go. It started with respecting our military and veterans and so forth. Here's an excerpt from the comments last night.
We need to support our veterans. It is tragic to see how the Veterans Department is operating today. It's scandalous. Giving veterans more choices to decide where they want their care to be administered ought to be front and center, the highest priority of this Congress. We need to protect the homeland because these new asymmetric threats are real. What's going on in the Middle East is real. It isn't just destabilizing the region. It is destabilizing the world. These are barbarians. Islamic terrorism wants to destroy Western civilization, plain and simple. And so we need to protect the homeland, which means we need to reauthorize the Patriot Act, for sure. And we need to establish the relationships that have created order and security and stability in the world, starting with Israel. My goodness, to be able to ruin a relationship that has created security is one that doesn't work. The Arab countries that now have no sense that the United States has their back, we need to restore the relationships there. We need to restore the relationships with Europe and encourage them to be part of their own national defense, as we see Russia now engaged in parts of the world that they shouldn't be doing. We need to engage in Asia again to deal with the threat of China. And we need to stop offending our closest friends and neighbors, most particularly Canada. It's really hard to imagine how you can screw up a relationship with the largest trading partner and the closest country that we have and our strongest ally in every way, but we've done it.
Thank you.
Restoring these relationships truly matters. And so the next president has that. And I would add that it's not just about security in the world, it's also about supporting the values that we hold dear. The simple fact is that there's a persecution going on in this world today, and there's no one crying out to say enough. But for us, who is going to cry out and support the Christians that are being persecuted in Iraq or in Nigeria? Or the persecution of Jews in the Middle East and in Europe? The United States needs to stand tall for the values that we believe in. And if we do that, we'll create a more secure world. I know for a fact that the next president, if we want to restore America's greatness and security, I know for a fact it cannot be Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
It cannot be Hillary Clinton. Here's the deal. She's been riding shotgun for 4 years. She'll try to do the Heisman on the president's policies. I can already see it. She's going, well, I wasn't there when all this happened. It started in the first term when we pulled back and disengaged in the world. And Hillary Clinton was front and center as it relates to the reset in Russia, or taking credit for the great work that happened in places like Libya. It's her policies as well, and we will hold her to account.
All right. Yeah.
I will tell you, I honestly believe we're at the potential of the greatest time to be alive in this country. I honestly believe it. The amount of innovation that is taking place in this country, the extraordinary nature of technology giving us the potential to live lives of purpose and meaning we can't even imagine. I've got a grandson named Jack, who's about 5 weeks old, and I read an article, the day he was born, I read an article that said, from a researcher that said, it's likely that children born now will live till they're 130 years old. And it's not as crazy as you might think. 130 years, because we're going to cure diseases. We're going to have the ability to solve so many problems. But in order for us to get to the point where all of this disruptive technology and innovation is our friend, we have to create high sustained economic growth where more people have a chance at earned success. So what do? We got to change how we tax, how we regulate, fix a broken immigration system that is truly a drain instead of an economic driver as it could be, embracing the energy revolution in our midst and celebrating its success rather than trying to push it back and make it harder for consumers to benefit and for the reindustrialization of our country and allow manufacturing to grow again here in the heartland and many other places. Fixing our entitlement systems. If we do these things, we'll grow at 4% per year again. It's not an idle thought. It's not a dream that's impossible to imagine. We can be the first country in the world to go from developed status, which is basically a recognition of ultimate decline, to being an emerging country again, young, dynamic, and aspirational again. But we have to fix these things, and it's going to require leadership. It's going to require the kind of leadership where we actually bring people together again. Republicans can win if we have a hopeful, optimistic message, if we give people a sense that it's not just idle chatter, that it's about leadership fixing these things, and that we campaign in places where Republicans haven't been seen in a while. go on the college campuses, into the barrios across this country, going to talk to African Americans in churches and talk about school choice to give them the same power that other people don't have, that other people have. We need to go to the places where the voters are. There are a whole lot of conservatives, they just don't know it yet. And if we do that, we will win. And if we win, we need to bring the country together again. I don't know about you, but I'm sick and tired of presidents and other political leaders pushing people down to make themselves look better. Always explaining why they can't do things. It's as though the dog ate their homework each and every day. And the divide in our country is quite dangerous. So here's my pledge if I go beyond the consideration to an actual being an actual candidate. I will do it with joy in my heart.
Yeah.
I will do it because I love this country and I believe our future is brighter than what we have today. And I will do it trying to draw people towards our cause rather than trying to divide us as a nation. I hope you want that kind of candidate going forward. I hope that you get involved as committed conservatives and Republicans to support candidates that once again believe that the future of this country is worth fighting for. Thank you all very much.
And there you have it, remarks from Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida. He was the governor of Florida from 1999 to 2007. Of course, his brother was president. His father was president. His father, the last Republican to carry the state of Michigan in a presidential election year. I thought his remarks were interesting and worth hearing, and that's why we shared them with you here this morning. You can judge for yourself. Well, we don't want another Bush in the White House. Well, that may be true. I can see your point of view, a little Bush fatigue. However, what is the alternative? Consider the alternative on the other side. If Jeb Bush is nominated, what is the alternative at that point? Something for you to consider on this free-for-all Friday. The phone number 888-900-9966. What do you think?
Steve Gruber Show. Get the news and information vital to your world.
45 after the hour. Let's hit the phone lines real quick on this free-for-all Friday. Dave on the line in Grand Rapids. Dave, what's on your mind, my friend?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You said, what do we think about Jeb Bush and what our alternatives are? I think if the Republican Party doesn't want to listen to their base and become conservative, I think we have to disown the Republican Party. And then I hear some people say, well, you're going to throw your vote away. Well, this country was started, the revolution was started by people who are willing to take risks. And the whole Constitution of the United States was a risky deal. And I guess I'd rather throw my vote away myself than to give it to the Republican Party. They disrespect me and throw it away for me.
Well, I think it's a fair point you make, Dave, but, you know, there is no perfect candidate. You know that. There can be people you agree with, people you don't agree with. So, you know, at some point, did you hear something there from, I mean, there's a couple of things there that I don't like specifically, like the Patriot Act and his support for reauthorizing the Patriot Act, which I think should be changed in many regards. But that's a debate you could have, but I wouldn't throw him out with the bathwater for that reason.
I don't know. We got to make some tough choices because if we keep voting for a party who, like I said, really disrespects us, they tell us anything we want to hear, and then they totally disregard our positions.
Well, and that's a fair point. You better listen to your people, or you won't have any people to have listen
exactly.
to. All right, Dave. Thanks for checking in, my friend.
Thanks for the call.
Absolutely. 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. But it's Friday, and last weekend was a great weekend to go see the movies. And I did go to the movies here to talk about that and more. Ron Van Timmeren. Ronnie, welcome to the program.
What's up, Steve? What'd you see, man?
Well, the biggest movie of all time. Which would be,
what was that? Tomorrowland?
No, Avengers.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm a late guy, but it's still out there. So you know, I went in there and watched the movie. Well, I watched most of the movie. My 3-year-old was a little rambunctious, but I did take him. So anybody who has a problem with that, I think it's a cartoon movie, and I think it was perfectly fine for him because he's a big Captain America guy. He's got Captain America stuff in his bedroom. He thinks he is Captain America, in fact.
Well, that's a good role model. He was probably the most conservative of the whole Avenger crowd and took Tony Stark to task for using bad words. You know, all good role model stuff there with Captain America.
Well, exactly. And in fact, I had to laugh out loud because when I, on occasion, use a blue word like that, Ron, somebody around me goes, language. And I'm like, it's like being
just like Captain America.
Exactly. So for Landon, for the little man, it was like, well, he understands. Again, he's being corrected in the movie as well. So that was actually pretty cute.
Pretty cute. Yeah, you're right. Avengers over $1 billion worldwide so far. Could end up certainly in the top five movie grosses of all time. This week it's going to be San Andreas as the number one movie in America with Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing a L.A. fire and rescue guy as the San Andreas Fault in California tumble into the sea. Well, not all in exactly that, but it was a fun disaster movie. Great special effects. Paul Giamatti, Carlos Gugino co-starring in that, sure to be number one and available on the IMAX in 3D as well.
Yeah, disaster movies are probably really good in the IMAX, huh?
Oh my gosh, the sound, the big screen, definitely the way to see this. Also available in D-Box, those seats that move with the action on the screen. So you can shake and bake along with The Rock this weekend. Reviews are pretty good for that. Reviews not so good for Aloha. I'm saying don't pay attention to the critics. I thought this was a very well-made movie, a good comedy, good drama, and it's got the fantastic cast of Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone, Rachel McAdams, Bill Murray, Alec Baldwin, and more. A charming movie set in Hawaii. That's rated PG-13 and a good date night movie.
Let me just say this, and let me just gauge your response, Ron. Let me just say this, and you respond with whatever comes to mind. Rachel McAdams. See, that's what I'm talking about. If you just turn the sound down if you don't like it.
He is so cute. And Emma Stone, too. I mean, between the two of them, they are just eye candy. And for the ladies, Bradley Cooper, not bad himself.
No.
So do check that out. And I'm going to be gone for the next couple of weeks. I'm going to miss you. But Entourage opening up next Wednesday, next week Friday. Spy with Melissa McCarthy, along with Insidious 3 and Love and Mercy, that movie about the Beach Boys. And then on June 12, Jurassic World. So every week, big Hollywood hits coming your way at Celebration Cinema.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Coming up, Jurassic World looks interesting, and I guess they're going to miss us both, Ron, because I won't be here either. So you know what? Enjoy your time. You going anywhere place cool?
I'm going to be in New York next week on business and pleasure, and then I'm going to go spend a week fishing up at Walloon Lake, baby.
Really? The Walloon? I've been there.
Oh, it's a beautiful lake, and I can't wait. It's going to be great. Got to get out there and enjoy your Michigan summer, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the best real estate in the whole state. Good for you, man. Ron. Good for you. Have a great vacation, my friend.
See the movies.
There you have it. Ron Van Timmeren, everybody. Walloon Lake is, if you've not been, it's a spectacular piece of water not too far from Lake Charlevoix and Lake Michigan, and I'm not kidding you. It is the best. If you own Walloon Lake Real Estate, congratulations. I'm kind of proud of you. It's the best real estate in the whole damn state. There's no question about that. And I did go to the movies, and, you know, I don't go to the movies often. Fortunately, the theater that I went to over the weekend had a cry room because, you know, the three-year-old's a tank. He's a tank. And, you know, head down, straight forward, motoring along, and he has an attention span shorter than my own, which, if for any of you that know me, is quite a statement. Having an attention span shorter than mine is quite an accomplishment, to say the least. But we did enjoy the movie for the most part, and, we were potty training during the movie. And, Dad, I got to go. Oh, really? I mean, want him out of diapers, but, good Lord. Anyhow, he just turned three, so that's what you got. Let's see here. What do we got still coming this morning? Looking at the rundown, we got Derek Blaylock. He's the guy that was here a few weeks ago. He's riding across the country on his bicycle, raising awareness for a friend of his who died of a sudden cardiac event. We'll have that. Plus, we'll have the Director of Research and Investigations for Judicial Watch. Can you imagine the United States gives away $7 billion in food stamps to people that aren't even eligible for it? It's all straight ahead this Free For All Friday on the Steve Gruber Show.
This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Six after the hour on this free-for-all Friday. Trying to make sure we cover everything we can this week and make sure you get all the information you need. The phone number here is 888-900-9966. You know, this next story hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but maybe it should. Maybe it should. I don't know if you've heard about this, but the Chinese are building islands, creating man-made islands in the South China Sea, and then declaring that they are, you know, property of China, and then declaring the water around these man-made islands to be theirs. They're artificial islands being developed here, and now it appears United States surveillance satellite imaging showing that the Chinese have positioned weaponry. The Wall Street Journal citing U.S. officials reporting that images taken about a month ago show two Chinese motorized artillery pieces on one of the artificial reefs. Now, these would not pose a threat to U.S. planes or ships, but it could reach neighboring islands. And it's also about the symbolism. We've built these islands. We will defend these islands. These are artificial islands. They don't actually exist, but we're going to build them, and then we're going to declare that we own the waters around them, that they are Chinese waters and not international water space. The Wall Street Journal reporting that in recent weeks, the artillery has disappeared from view, though it's not clear why. Now, but here's the thing. Again, a weak foreign policy, a weak United States government. And Vladimir Putin will go where he wants in Ukraine. The Chinese will build islands. Nobody cares what America has to say or do because America doesn't say, well, I'll take that back. America talks a lot and does nothing about it. You know, Teddy Roosevelt's saying, speak softly and carry a big stick, was great. You know, the policy now is run your mouth all the time and go golfing. Yeah, it's a joke. Yeah, if you ran your railroad this way, your railroad would be out of business. American officials said the artillery was within striking range of an island claimed by Vietnam. And that country's government has armed that island with various weapons for a long period of time. The Chinese embassy maintaining the development of the artificial islands was primarily civilian. It needs to be emphasized that the Nansha Islands is China's territory, and China has every right to deploy on relevant islands and reefs necessary facilities for military defense. And this is what the Chinese are saying. On Wednesday, Defense Secretary Ash Carter strongly defended American military flights over the artificial land in the South China Sea and called for a lasting halt to China's land reclamation projects, or creation projects, as it were. And so if they claim that, why not a floating island? Why not a floating reef out in the middle of the ocean that America could claim? China claiming that Washington has created a double standard, criticizing its country's activities in the region and staying selectively mute about the activities carried out by other countries. U.S. officials maintain that other countries' projects take place on a far smaller scale than China's. The Pentagon said in a recent report that the construction, estimated at more than 2,000 acres, could be used for military airstrips, and it could. A square mile, for those of you that don't know, is 640 acres. So this island's more than 3 square miles, is the point that I'm making. More than 3 square miles of this created island, the first one here, could certainly support an airfield, naval ports, surveillance systems, military systems. And what are we really going to do about it? Let me tell you, not a damn thing. State Department spokesman John Kirby said in a statement to the Journal that Secretary of State John Kerry, weakling, well, okay, I added that, has given China a clear warning about its activities. Clear warning. What do you do, draw a line in the sand? I mean, really? Who takes that seriously? One of the callers gives me this. If America tried to build an island somewhere in the world, the environmentalists would go crazy. They'd be all over it, saying it's a threat to the ecology and the world and probably promotes global warming. But why don't they say anything when China goes and builds an artificial island? Well, it's true. Closer to home, when talking about the environment, environmental groups, speaking of which, are trying to spotlight a controversial Great Lakes oil pipeline by staging a protest. The pipeline, this is written by MLive, so it says controversial. Anything that comes to environment from MLive is controversial. The pipeline's not all too controversial, but they'd like to say it is. But they're staging a protest and panel discussion outside the Mackinac Policy Conference this week. Protesters are gathering at the Conquering Heritage Park in Mackinac City. They actually did that a couple of days ago. They want to shut down Line 5. Line 5 is a oil pipeline that runs under the Straits of Mackinac. The pipeline discussions happen amid increasing attention being paid to Line 5, which transports petroleum from northern Wisconsin to southern Ontario. And so they want this stopped. Members of the Sierra Club in Michigan and the Chippewa Indian Tribe feel the same way. The 2010 spill by Enbridge in the Kalamazoo River, quite the focus of environmental efforts here, and they compare the probability or possibility that this Line 5 would leak. Enbridge defending its interest in Line 5 in a lawsuit filed against the United States Forest Service by the Sierra Club, which claims the agency violated federal law by granting the company a permit to continue operating the pipeline, which passes under the Huron-Manistee National Forest before terminating in Sarnia, which, of course, is in Ontario. The pipeline carries nearly 23 million gallons of crude oil and petroleum products every day. It does not carry the heavy diluted bitumen that the company spilled in 2010. That's an impressive number. 23 million gallons a day. How much oil is moved around this country every day? Billions of gallons. And every now and then there's an accident. But boy, they do it well overall. These companies do it very well overall. 14 after the hour, it's Free for All Friday on the Steve Gruber Show.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
You know what I want. You know what I need. Oh, maybe you don't. Do I have to come right flat out and tell
you? You know, really, what's $1 billion between friends anyway? Free for All Friday here on the Steve Gruber Show, brought to you in part by TotalFirearmsGunShop.com. TotalFirearmsGunShop.com, a great place to buy new, used collectibles and get educated. Statewide, find out what you're looking for and find anything you're looking for. TotalFirearmsGunShop.com. It's the Steve Gruber Show. Now, the bloated federal agencies of the federal government, I mean, they never cease to amaze me on how much money they can squander. $7 billion in food benefits to ineligible recipients, though, in the food stamp program did catch my attention. Chris Farrell here, the Director of Research and Investigations for Judicial Watch. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Great to be on with you. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, does it not amaze you at some point? You just go, well, here's $1 billion. And the thing is, we don't even look at $1 billion being a big deal anymore. You know, those of us that consume the news and so forth and read different things. Oh, $1 billion. Well, that's not much. That's $1,000 million. I mean, and we just kind of go, oh, yeah, well, there it goes. And here we sit, a country that's $18 trillion in debt. And it's obscene to me in many ways.
I think it's because the number, frankly, is incomprehensible to the average American. I mean, you can understand a car payment or a mortgage payment or your credit card bill, but when you start using numbers like $1 billion or $1,000 million, it's so far beyond the average American's experience that, I mean, it's like talking about particle physics, right? It's just, it's out there. You know, yeah, it's true, but how does it apply to me? Nah, it probably doesn't, you know.
Yeah, particle physics might actually be easier to understand than the way we squander money sometimes.
That's true.
You know, I mean, you look at it. I mean, $1 billion, okay, it's an enormous amount of money. And so here's $7 billion. And I think the point that in part that I'm making here, Chris, is that we see these headlines so often, $1 billion here, $10 million there, $100 billion there, that people just, their eyes glass over, and even though they can't comprehend the numbers, it's like, well, if we spend $100 billion on something, well, that's no big deal. We do that all the time. I think it's the mindset that finally ends up with people. But $7 billion, how do we as a government give away $7 billion in benefits to people that aren't even eligible? How do these things happen?
Yeah, I think the point of irritation is the fact that we gave it to people who are, quote, ineligible recipients.
Yeah. Right?
So by law, they're forbidden from receiving the benefit, yet they did, and they did it over and over again, even in spite of an inspector general report which said, hey, you are abusing the process of the system, and this should not be occurring. And, you know, an IG report, be damned, full speed ahead, let's keep doing it. I mean, what this really points to, I mean, the underlying issue is really a food stamp. It's a getting food to people through an ag department food benefit. And look, we're the greatest country in the world, and no one in the United States should be starving. I don't care. Everyone hits a rough patch, you know, at some point, and yeah, I'm not denying food to people. That isn't the issue. What we're talking about here, though, is the creation of the Obama food stamp army, right? This is a deliberate effort to make people dependent upon the nanny state to care for their every need. And, this is like a drug pusher, you know, they're pushing a benefit to get people dependent upon it, and everyone understands that it's coming from, you know, Big Daddy Obama taking care of everyone.
I like that, Big Daddy Obama. You know, he'd just be the, yeah, it's kind of the way it is. He's going to give us what we want when we need it, no big deal. But, you know, here's the thing. Is it even possible, Chris, to have fiscal responsibility as a general rule in Washington, or is it just too big and too much stuff going on and too many moving parts for there to even consider efficiency being part of the process?
Well, I mean, it always comes down to this question. It is a leadership issue. You know, we have this field of Lilliputians, right? All these little characters running around who don't have a lot of courage or a lot of spine. There's no real leadership in Congress at all. I mean, there's people who occupy the positions, but they're gutless. And so as long as you're controlling the levers of the state, and that's what Obama gets to do as the executive, and there's no real opposition. Boehner controls the purse strings, and he's not about to say no. You know, it's the shortest complete sentence, right? He's not going to cut off funding to programs because he's terribly afraid of being called mean, right? If you're called mean, it's the end of the world. And so he doesn't have the guts to do that. And frankly, it's his obligation as the loyal opposition to...
Can you imagine? You just make this come to mind. It just makes me laugh because you're right. Can you imagine the commercials, the pushback? If Boehner cleaned up $7 billion in fraud, which is what this is, fraud, because they're not even eligible for the benefit, The Democrats will be out there. Republicans have cut $7 billion from the food stamp program. Old people and children will be starving in the streets. I mean, that's what they would do, even though he's cleaning up fraud. That's exactly how it would get treated, Chris. You're exactly right.
Yep, and so obviously Boehner and all the people on the right like to starve children. I mean, that's the way it'll be presented.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with reality. But that's the perception and the spin. That's the talking points. And they're not smart enough to come up with a real legitimate pushback. Instead, they just kind of, you know, go into the fetal position and start making apologies.
Yeah, which is you know, if we're going to end fraud, you know, but we have a problem with, there's no shortage of feckless politicians on either side of the aisle in this country. So I guess, you know, I'll give you 20 seconds for the last word, but there's really no hope in sight for this one, is there?
Well, I'm not quite as pessimistic as you, but, you know, I have belief that at some point when the pain threshold gets bad enough, people will look for leadership, and that leadership will appear, and we'll be able to improve things, you know. But you can't give up, and you can't let these guys get away with it. You got to keep pounding away at them.
Right, and I appreciate that. I just think that, unfortunately, any given day, there are probably bigger priorities, and that way this one will continue to slip through the cracks. Chris Farrell, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
There you have it. Chris Farrell, Director of Research and Investigations for Judicial Watch, one of our favorites here on the program. 25 after the hour on the Steve Gruber Show.
Bicycle.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to
All right, my friends. 33 after the hour.
I say white, I say bar, I say bite.
We're trying to track down our friend Derek Blaylock. He's running across the country to bring attention to the plight of people that have heart disease and heart issues that they're born with at an early age. Running across America to bring his message to people that you should have people tested. He's been on the program before, and we'll have him here in just a moment. But I found this other story here that I find this fascinating in the wake of what happened in Waco. Unless you got something there for me, Alex. Okay, hold on. Well, we'll do the Waco thing in a minute here. We're going to do Derek Blaylock first. As I said, he's out there for Tommy's heart. And he's biking across America. He was here in the studio with me here not too long ago. Derek, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Steve.
Hey, glad to have you back. Okay, real quickly, bring people up to speed on what you're trying to draw attention to first, and then we'll get into what you're doing about it.
Yeah, so I'm raising money for help fund the Thomas Smith Memorial Foundation, which helps fund free heart screenings for middle school and youth athletes. One of my buddies passed away due to undiagnosed enlarged heart my senior year in high school, so his family created this charity. And ever since then, I've kind of wanted to do something a little more. And this summer, I'm biking across America to raise money for his charity.
Now, you're literally riding your bicycle from... Now, where did you start?
Yes, sir. I started in Charleston, South Carolina on May 16th, and I'm about 50 miles from Pittsburgh right now.
So how many miles have you covered so far, then? How far from Charleston to Pittsburgh?
About 1,200 miles so far, and it's, I think, about 50 miles to Pittsburgh.
All right. I'm sure you've mapped this out, trying to figure out how many miles you go each day and how does it work. So when does this trip end, and where will you be? Somewhere in California, Oregon, where will you be?
It'll end around August 1st, and I'm actually biking back. So I'll be back in South Carolina on August 1st.
Holy, I mean, you're going there and then riding back?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Dude, you need a lot of powder, I'm telling you, because you're going to get, you know. I'm not telling you anything you don't know at this point. I hope you have a really comfortable seat, Derek.
Yeah, I know.
To say the least. So tell us about the trip. All right, you've gone 1,200 miles so far. And what have you seen? What's been the most interesting part so far of just things that you're seeing across America?
Well, I've met a lot of great people, and yesterday was probably the coolest because I was riding like in the Appalachian Mountains through this Allegheny Passway, and it was this old railroad, so it was right on the river, and it was just a cool scene the whole entire way. But I've seen a lot of, I'm going through North Carolina, Virginia, I've seen a lot of like old Civil War like memorials and stuff, but I think the most interesting thing that I've seen is like the country from a different like perspective, because there's a lot of places still like feeling it from the recession and stuff, and
oh sure,
you can kind of get locked up in your own little corner from East Lansing, Michigan and stuff. So seeing like the different parts of the country that are like doing well or struggling, that was kind of interesting. The eye-opening experience for me so far.
I'd have to agree with you, Derek, and I do a fair amount of cycling myself, you know, when I can. And the world looks different at 15 or 18 miles an hour than it does at, you know, 85 when you're blowing by it. And you get a chance to actually see things at a much slower speed and take in the small towns and, like you said, the memorials for the Civil War or the battlefields or the people you get a chance to see. And so I think it's a different world at that speed is what you're telling us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love some of these small towns that have kind of reinvented themselves. A lot of these small towns were railroad towns, and once the railroads were gone through most of these towns, they had to kind of reinvent themselves. Some have made them into like little ice cream shops and little you can go kayaking and stuff. So they kind of reinvented themselves to be something more than just like living in the past, which I have seen across the country so far, especially like some of the bigger cities too, have kind of been stuck in the past and not really want to reinvent themselves. Detroit's getting a little better, but like Flint hasn't really reinvented itself when it probably should have. And I think some of these small towns can be an example for some other cities that
you're seeing a cross section
kind of move forward.
Yeah, you're seeing a cross section of what's working, what's not, what people are thinking in different places. How many miles are you going each day?
About 90
to 100 miles a day. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And yeah, I guess you have to be careful about hydration. Make sure you eat enough and so forth, because there'd be a health concern for you at some point if you don't take care of your body as well.
Oh yeah, I've been eating a ton. I can't get enough food right now. My mom's with me for another couple of days before she goes back to work, and she's just in awe of how much I've been eating. And so it's definitely been interesting, because I've never been a huge eater, but right now I can't get enough food.
Well, you can't help yourself. So before I let you go, though, so here you are. You've ridden 1,200 miles so far from Charleston, South Carolina, just about to make it to Pittsburgh. You're going to go all the way to the West Coast and then basically touch the wall and return hopefully by August 1st, all the way back to Charleston. So what has your reception been to your message about, you know, getting people tested for, you know, chronic health and heart issues that maybe go undetected?
Oh, it's been awesome. Everyone I've talked to along the way and stuff have been really receptive. I know, like, I ate lunch at this diner yesterday, and they get a lot of bikers, but she said, like, this was probably the most unique and stuff, and she was going to donate and stuff. So I've been getting a lot of good reception, and I've kind of been directing them to my website and Facebook and stuff, so they could like follow my journey, because I met a couple other guys. One was Scott. He's from Erie, Pennsylvania. He was going from Washington D.C. to Pittsburgh, and he was just he was doing it with a group, but like, in his heart, he was riding for one of his buddies who was a bicyclist, and he died from a drunk driver. So it kind of connected me with some other people who've been doing some similar things.
That's pretty cool, yeah. So, all right, Derek, before we let you slide here, what is your Facebook page where people can keep up with you?
Yeah, definitely. My Facebook is Bike4, the number 4, Tommy's Heart. Facebook slash Bike for Tommy's Heart, or you can check me out on my website, and that's bikefortommysheart.com. That one is F-O-R, so, or I'm on Twitter as well at Biking for Tommy. So there's a couple different ways you can check me out. And I'm also on GoFundMe, so you guys can check me out there as well.
All right, Derek Blaylock, everybody. Derek Blaylock, he's riding across America and then back again to bring attention to childhood heart issues that go undetected. Derek, ride on, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me on.
There you have it. We'll check back with him in a week or two here to see where he's made it. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a free-for-all Friday.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
Yeah. Dude's going to need some powder. I'm not kidding you. Better be wearing some really good undergarments like Under Armour or he'll be in deep pain. At any rate, here's a different kind of biking thing going on. If you haven't heard this story, this is something that just popped up on my radar. An armed biker gang, cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad and a mosque in Arizona. What could possibly go wrong? Right? I mean, what could go wrong with that? We will find out today when two organizers, John Ritzheimer and Flash Nelson, host what is being billed as a peaceful demonstration outside the Islamic Community Center in Phoenix. It is the former site of worship for Elton Simpson and Nadir Sufi. Those were the two idiots killed after they opened fire outside a May 3rd contest featuring cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad in suburban Dallas, Texas. Simpson had apparently no direct link to the Islamic State, but was sympathetic to its cause. Others not so sure. By the way, some Muslims consider depictions of Muhammad to be blasphemous. Now, just like the cartoon contest in Dallas, this event, scheduled for 6:15 tonight, appears to welcome controversy. In a Facebook invite, the planners urge attendees to take advantage, full advantage of the Constitution, most specifically their Second Amendment rights to keep and carry weapons. So far, 163 people have RSVP'd. And here's what it says on Facebook. Round two. This will be a peaceful protest in front of the Islamic Community Center in Phoenix, Arizona. This is in response to the recent attack in Texas where two armed terrorists with ties to the Islamic State attempted jihad. Everyone is encouraged to bring American flags and any message that you would like to send to the known acquaintances of the two gunmen. The Islamic Community Center is known as a place that the terrorists frequented. People are also encouraged to utilize their Second Amendment right at this event, just in case our First Amendment comes under the much-anticipated attack. The date is Friday, May 29th at 6:15. Bikers will meet at Denny's, located down the street. There will be a Muhammad cartoon drawing contest, and the winner will be announced after the party. Participants must show the cartoon at the rally. You know, if you want to push back against terrorists, you could just have a bunch of bikers show up. I don't think they're intimidated, not in the least. And it says, thank you for your support, by the way. The rally is a follow-up to that event. The event drew little attention earlier, the one previously, until the shootings, of course. Facebook reveals little about Nelson, but Ritzheimer's post show him to be a very anti-Muslim individual. And good for him. It's called the First Amendment. His right to freedom of speech. This is kind of a, this page here is seems to be kind of anti-biker in this deal. On his personal page, Ritzheimer has photos of him waving an American flag while wearing a T-shirt that is derogatory to Islam. He identifies himself as a former Marine and states that he works with Dysfunctional Veterans, a group that appears to be a community of former soldiers. Ritzheimer did not return a request for comments on this story. So that's happening at 6:15 tonight in Phoenix. You know, I don't think there's going to be I doubt that any jihadists are going to show up and create any trouble for the boys on the bikes. I mean, the last person that mouthed off is still laying in the parking lot in Waco. So watch your mouth. I got a couple more stories for you before we go for the week that I just think are fascinating. I mean, food will kill you, right? Poodle kid. You'll also get killed if you get smashed over the head with a crock pot. Apparently, this is from Detroit. Tawana Sullivan, a 51-year-old Detroit area woman, accused of killing her 66-year-old friend Cheryl Livy in a Livonia apartment with a crock pot. She was a little bit drunk. They got in an argument over presidential politics last year. Sullivan pleaded guilty to second-degree murder yesterday while mentally ill. In exchange, Wayne County prosecutor Kim Worthy's office dismissing a more serious charge of first-degree premeditated murder, which carries a punishment of automatic life in prison. Sullivan faces a sentence of between 23 and 50 years in prison. Now, they haven't been specific about this, because I'd be real curious. What was the discussion about presidential politics that led Miss Sullivan to smash her crock pot over the head of over her friend? Anyhow, Sullivan's attorney, John McWilliams, told WDIV-TV in Detroit that his client registered a blood alcohol level of 0.41. Ooh. Amazed you can even pick up the crock pot at that point. McWilliams told Hometown Life that Sullivan suffered from mental health issues, possibly dealing with an aneurysm back in 2009. Yeah, well, didn't work out for her. 4 years after, and speaking of a crock, this is a crock of, well, you figure it out. 4 years after breaking ground and with construction costs totaling now $151 million, the Wayne County Jail still sits empty in downtown Detroit, the empty structure costing taxpayers $1.2 million a month just to take care of it. $1.2 million a month. You are so generous for doing that. A prison there in downtown Detroit deemed too expensive to complete. Now a construction site frozen in time that still costs you and I, and especially local taxpayers, more than $1 million a month to have there and make sure that it's sitting there dusted off. It was supposed to be a state-of-the-art lockup in the heart of the Motor City, but 4 years after breaking ground, with construction costs totaling $150 million and no end in sight, the city pulled the plug on the project 4 years ago. And there it sits. There it sits, my friends. Somebody's great idea was going to bring... there's shovel-ready jobs for you. Shoveling it right on top of you. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you should just finish the thing. How does it do any good to spend that kind of money and then not finish it? It's a weird world in which I live some days, I'll tell you that. There's just no common sense out there. If you can't afford it, don't build it. But don't build it halfway and cost us millions of dollars and just leave it sitting there. Who the hell's running this thing? 51 after the hour.